This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver. It's been a week of political chaos, with Congressman Ken Buck announcing a surprise resignation and his colleague Lauren Boebert calling the move a swampy backroom deal. So me and producer Paul Caroli have got our politics and green chili correspondent Justine Sandoval back to help us figure out what the heck is going on. Plus, is Denver really home to the worst grocery stores in America? And our wins and fails of the week. And just a warning, this episode features some explicit language. Today is Friday, March 15th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city where, yes, two more cars drove into the Cherry Creek. That is three in 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, for those keeping track. Justine, lifelong Denverite, have you ever driven into the Cherry Creek?
I have not done so. I've thought about it.
You've thought about it? Okay, because they were teasing me last week about imagining myself, you know, swerving off into the water. But you've thought about it? You've pictured yourself doing it too?
Yeah, I've had that intrusive thought before. And I've thought about what I would do if, like, my car did go into the Cherry Creek. So it's a real thing. I just have not been one to actually have that fate.
I prefer to just maintain the hubris I have of never doing it. So look at me. I've never driven into the Cherry Creek. Well, yes, we do love to talk about that on this show. I will say that is one of my favorite topics, but that is not what we're talking about today. We've got some deep Colorado state politics to dig into. Before we do that, it is Friday. We are not in the beautiful 5280 studios because there is a blizzard. We are recording live from Zoom. I'm here with producer Paul Caroli, who you've already heard. Hi, Paul.
Top of the morning to you, Bree. Happy St. Patty's Day.
Oh, is it? I should know.
In a couple days.
Okay. I was like, I'm a bad Irish person. And of course, our politics and green chili correspondent, who you've also heard, Justine Sandoval. Good morning.
What up, guys?
Hey. So, okay. We are... Man, we are going to attempt to dig into something that everyone in our news world and politics world has been trying to figure out for the last 48 hours.
Trying and failing, I would say.
We've all read several articles. We've talked to people. We are still confused, but we're going to do our best to explain what's happening with the Ken Buck situation. So Congressman Ken Buck, who has represented North and Eastern Colorado since 2015, announced this week that he's not just retiring, which we knew, but he is actually leaving office early. It feels like a chaos move for this former Weld County prosecutor who says he's fed up with the rancor and antics in Congress. There's a lot of folks that are looking to replace him, including, of course, Lauren Boebert. But Paul, this situation is just really confusing. What is going on?
I'm going to try my best.
Okay, we have faith in you.
Just the logistics. I'm not even going to approach the strategy or what people might be thinking. Just the logistics. Just civics 101.
Fair.
From your friendly podcaster, me. So Buck is resigning his seat early, which means there is a vacancy in Congress right now. Now, law dictates that Governor Polis has the right to choose a date for a special election to fill that seat. And he has already done so. He chose June 25th, which happens to be the exact same day as the primary elections, which will determine who will represent this district starting in January for the next term. So there's going to be two elections happening on the same day, one to fill the vacancy and one for the term starting in January. Well, and because this district is so conservative, that Republican primary will almost certainly determine who wins the seat in November. So voters in Windsor, Douglas County, Greeley, all across this congressional district are going to be picking a congressperson to serve for the remainder of Buck's term and the next term on the same day. Now, the intriguing part of this is how those nominees are going to get on the special election ballot to fill the vacant seat, because there's 11 people running in the Republican primary, presumably all of whom would want to fill the seat, but they may not get that chance. And the people who are going to do that at some point in the next few weeks probably are a committee of party leaders. So in this case, the important party is the Republican Party. And so probably county level Republican Party officials at some point in the next few weeks are going to come together and they're going to pick their candidate to put on the special election ballot to fill the seat for the next 6 months at the end of this year.
So we're basically looking at, this district is looking at someone to temporary hold the seat and then the next successor.
Exactly.
To Ken Buck, ultimately. Justine, I feel like I've learned a lot about Ken Buck from you, because you do a lot of work in that area of the state. What do you think Ken Buck was thinking with this early resignation move?
Well, I guess the buck stops here. So Ken Buck, he had announced that he was going to retire right after Lauren Boebert, who currently represents Colorado's 3rd district, announced that she was hopping over to the CD4 district, which she thought she had a, if we remember, she narrowly won in 2022 in her district. So she hopped over to CD4, which is a lot stronger Republican hold in the state. And because of that, Buck finally just announced that he was going to retire right after that. But now this retirement comes early, which there's a lot of speculation. It's no secret that Ken Buck was like fed up with Congress. He's been saying this for a long time. He was a holdout in the speaker election several times because he did not agree with the direction that Congress is going. And he's been very vocal about his inability to work within his party. So Ken Buck had an opportunity to leave early. He was over it. He did. A lot of the speculation is that not only did he leave early to say goodbye to the party he no longer wants to work with in Congress, but it could also give him opportunity to kind of ice out Boebert from that seat, because it puts her in a very particular position where she would have to decide between vacating the CD3 seat if she ran in the special election and won. So she would essentially have to vacate that CD3 seat, leaving another Republican issue here, because they only have a 4-vote majority in Congress, could only lose 2 people. And this would put both of those seats at risk. But the big problem is then CD3 would be vacant if she won that. So she has announced now that she will not run in that special election to temporarily fill that seat. Instead, will go ahead to get that nomination in November as a Republican candidate. So, you know, the question is, does this hurt Boebert? Does this move hurt Boebert, essentially?
I mean, I just have this image of Ken Buck in the meme that's like Winona Ryder in Heathers, where she just has a cigarette in her mouth and there's an explosion happening behind her. And I just feel like that is him in this moment where he's just like, fuck all.
Yeah, I feel because, like, people are talking about Ken Buck as this like mastermind here. Like, he put together some big beat. I mean, Boebert herself called it a swampy backroom deal. That's what she's accused him of doing. And I just don't see that. I feel like he's just done. That's my impression of this week. He was just like, I already thought I was done. Now I'm really done.
I'm really done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, Ken Buck has not been cooperative with the party sometime, and this puts him in the realm of like the Liz Cheneys and the Mitt Romneys, who are just fed up. They're just over it. And I don't think it was a mastermind plan. It was just a happy coincidence that he could leave and also have the chance to, you know, possibly block Boebert from getting that seat in his district.
Sort of just an added bonus to make Boebert's life a little more difficult.
Yeah.
As she's already making this precarious jump, right? I mean, this is all goes back to her last election, which everybody thought was in the bag and then ended up being really close between her and a Democrat, right? So this is why she made this initial move to somewhere where she saw maybe more Republican support. But Ken Buck may have made that just a little bit more difficult.
Well, I think something that's really key here is like this vacancy committee being made up of party leaders, like longtime county officials inside the party, because she doesn't have connections with these people. Like, this isn't her district. I feel like someone like Jerry Sonnenberg, who just got the endorsement of former Senator Cory Gardner, who represented this district, like someone like him is probably going to have a bigger advantage in with those folks. Now, on the other hand, maybe that redounds to Boebert's advantage because now she gets to run as this MAGA insurgent. You know, we already saw that tone from her in her response, this when she was talking about the swampy backroom deal. You know, now she, for the next few months, she gets to appeal to MAGA folks and be that outsider here that's talking about the taking down the establishment.
Oh, absolutely. And Ken Buck was receiving a lot of backlash from people in his district and the party who, you know, consider him a rhino or more of a moderate, which I would never call Ken Buck a moderate Republican in my view. But, you know, this, no. So this actually, like, I think the district was already going this way. A lot of Lauren Boebert is like the queen of MAGA in Colorado, but she was not the only MAGA candidate. There was there are many candidates there trying to outdo each other as far as that's concerned. So this, you know, they're not with the establishment. They're not going to necessarily see that establishment Republican pick as a candidate that they would go for. So yes, this could actually work in her favor, which makes me laugh because it's like nothing that they're doing is like stopping this woman.
Yeah, I mean, she is relentless. We'll give her that.
Yeah, she still has a path to victory here. And I think this probably freaked her out a little bit. But when you really look at like the lay of the land, this could be nothing. She could still very well lead just to victory in November.
I'm desperate for polling on this race. I feel like we've gotten a couple of really like crappy straw polls with very, very small sample sizes. I know the 538 site, they have her up by 25 points in this race right now. I don't know what polls that's really based on. But I feel like we got a real information deficit here, and it's forcing us to rely on all this like speculation about backroom deals and county commissioners, and who knows what these people are thinking. You know, maybe they love Lauren Boebert. Maybe she's gone on a handshake tour of CD4 and she's making allies already. I have no idea.
But you're saying too, Paul, at the end of the day, we still don't know what voters are thinking, and that's going to be who ultimately decides this anyway. Yeah. So we shall see. This should be really interesting. Really quickly before we move on, do either of you think this is, there's been some sort of rumors about the, not collusion with the Democrats, but this being a benefit to the Democrats in some way. Do either of you see that argument?
Yeah, maybe not in CD4. There is actually a group, the Unite Party in Colorado, or Unite Group, who is a nonpartisan group working together. And I know Boebert threw out the accusation that Ken Buck is working with Democrats and this is a whole conspiracy, but I don't think that is the case here at all. Ken Buck was just tired. He was fed up with his party. He was fed up with the conspiracy theorists, and he wasn't going to go along with it anymore. And I think that's really what it came down to. I don't think Ken Buck in any way is, you know, working with Democrats to get rid of, you know, Lauren Boebert.
I think that's a really good point, Justine. That Unite group, they've got that a ballot measure that just got approved. They're I think gathering signatures right now that would totally reform how our elections work and give us ranked choice voting here in Colorado. I feel like that is a secret winner in all this, because I feel like voters are just going to see this and feel frustrated, you know, feel powerless. Like what county committee, what vacancy committee is going to pick my candidate? Like maybe I want to throw, you know, sweep all the dishes off the table and change it all up.
That's a whole other show. We can talk about those Unite ballot measures because, yeah, that's a whole other factor here. But there are a lot of Republicans who, you know, believe in these conspiracies between the Democrats and the Republicans to ice out the MAGA crowd, the Freedom Caucus in D.C.
That's fascinating. Well, I'm just feeling for the voters right now in these districts, because you're going to have a very confusing primary/special election happening at the same time. But we want to hear from you. Do you think this was a, quote, swampy backroom deal or an honorable move to defend the sanctity of our democratic process? This is the Boebert hotline. We know this. This is really a conversation, I think, less about Buck and more about Boebert. But the Boebert hotline is always open. You can text us or leave us a voicemail at 720-500-5418. Let us know what you think.
Maybe you know somebody voting in this district and what they're thinking about, what the general tenor is of the voters in this part of the state. Again, that number is 720-500-5418. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, the bad, bad world of grocery stores in Colorado. This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CityCastDenver for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com. And we're back. Okay, Westward reported this week on this analysis of an analysis of 3,000 grocery stores across 100 cities looking at which were the worst. Four Denver area stores, four in the Denver metro, were among the 10 worst in the country. I mean, we all have to go to the grocery store, so we're all going to have opinions about this. I will say too, sadly, a lot of these were in Aurora. It sucks. I can't imagine this being my regular grocery store experience, but there were just lots of comments from folks. Number three on this list was the Walmart at 14,000 East Exposition Avenue in Aurora, ranked third worst grocery store in the United States. Reviewers said it was the worst Walmart ever. Quote, this is from someone's comment about the grocery store. You can keep your urine-soaked, used condom-smelling Walmart, and I'll never be back there, one reviewer said. Absolute disgrace. Sam Walton would slap the piss out of your management. I don't even know where to go with this, you guys. What?
I would feel honored if Sam Walton slapped me. It'd be a badge of honor.
I'm just like, I must live in a great world because I don't have a bad grocery store. I go to a grocery store regularly in Lakewood. That's great. Justine, what did you think about this information?
Well, I wasn't shocked to see my local grocery store on the list, which is often lovingly referred to as the unsafe way on 20th and Park.
Yes. I saw that on the list and I thought, proximity-wise, this has to be Justine's grocery store.
Totally. And it's been my groceries. Well, not exactly my grocery store. I grew up on the north side, but my family being from Curtis Park, we went to the unsafe way all the time. So that was my grandmother's grocery store. It was like the grocery store in the neighborhood. It still is one of the only places to get groceries. So yeah, it's always been kind of a wild experience there. I will say that it is a lot more chaotic than I remember growing up. Like, you can't even take the baskets outside anymore. So
it's all on lockdown.
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the little area it's in. There's a liquor store. There's a laundromat. There's a Wingstop. There's like a bunch of things to hang out and do there. So it attracts more people. Plus, it's like in an intersection of the city where a lot of neighborhoods kind of meet. You have Uptown. You have like Cap Hill, Colfax spilling over. So it attracts different walks of people, which can sometimes create chaos.
Sure.
But it's really interesting to see in there because you see, you know, since the neighborhood's changed a lot, they're trying to cater to some of the new residents, but we're still like, it's still unsafe way. So you just see like this mix of culture constantly in there. I do try to avoid it. And, you know, the other store that I go to made the honorable mentions list.
And oh, no.
I believe you nicknamed it this, Brie, was the Apocalyptic King Supers over off Spear.
Ah, yes. Number 16, worst grocery store in America.
The one that feels like we are underground because the world is no longer a tolerable place above ground.
Yeah, which I love that King Supers. So, but I often don't go into it. It is a great pickup location because not a lot of people are picking up groceries there. So shout out to my people there. They know me. I love them. I got my schedule set with King Supers there.
Paul, what did you think about this list?
This tapped into one of my favorite things of all time, which is the user review, the aggregated user review, because that's their whole methodology here. Was they said to fairly identify the best and worst grocery stores in the U.S., we focused only on stores with over 1,000 reviews. We then combined both the star rating and the number of reviews to rank each grocery store. So it's all about user reviews, and user reviews to me are about expectations. Like, you only are going to go and write a review and give a star rating if you're not getting what you thought you were going to get. So I feel like what this tells me is that people here in Denver have really high expectations for their grocery stores, which I don't know why that is, but there you go.
You know, I mean, I think you were kind of dancing around this, Justine, but like, you know, I grew up here too, and I always knew that is the unsafe way as well. And there's just like this really... It's a racially tinged situation. I mean, let's be realistic.
We should
it's
talk about that.
It's just how people, it's really the gentrification part of this is the conversation, like you're saying, that like trying to cater to new people, but also like, man, I don't even know how to get into this, but I remember the moment I realized that that was really an unkind thing to say, not just like, oh, the unsafe way, kind of like we call Queen Supers in Capitol Hill. It just felt like a nickname, but then I realized, I remember in my 20s, like, oh, this is really bad. This is not, I don't know. And I think that that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and it does. When we say unsafe way jokingly as members of the community, but it really is unkind in a lot of ways. One of the things is there are not a lot of grocery stores around here. So you're sending a lot of people for this one resource. So it does get overcrowded. And you do have people who... you know, are mixing from different walks of life. And there's people who are going to go on and Google review are a lot more judgmental, I think, mm-hmm. or like mm-hmm. upset and like have that lower expectation. Like you said, Paul, people are likely to complain more than they are to like take a moment and say, oh, I had a great experience at the grocery store. So there's a lot of that. But yeah, when you have one grocery store in a neighborhood that's serving so many people, it's going to get chaotic. And so it's kind of an unfair judgment to call that the unsafe way. It's just the really
totally
over.
Well, it's just like over, like you said, it's kind of like, so I was at the grocery store this week right before the snowstorm, and my grocery store normally isn't that busy, and it was total chaos, like full shelves empty. And so when you're a high traffic grocery store, that might be your norm more often than other stores that only get it during specific times of the year. So I think you're absolutely right. It's just like how many folks they're serving probably overloads how much they can actually serve people well, you know?
No, what do y'all make of the Walmart factor here? Like so many of these top or worst grocery stores in America are Walmarts. The Walmarts in Aurora are obviously in the top 10 here. Apparently Walmart made up 38% of this worst of list.
Well, they're the ones that have been knocking out grocery stores for decades. Like they come in and take over and other grocery stores close and there's no competition and neighborhoods are stuck with the Walmart. So I think part of it is the traffic, high traffic to those particular places. But the other part of it is, you guys, this ties into the union conversation we've been having for the last couple of years. I think that workers are probably overworked. They're underpaid. Their stores are understaffed. They're overwhelmed. You've got overwhelmed people. And also these are folks that a lot of these folks lived through the pandemic working on the front lines. Like, let's not forget that. And I think that that really weighs into how Walmart views and manages its own stores, personally. That's where I see this from a worker perspective and it being a struggle for them.
I totally agree, Bree. And, you know, when these stores are in these certain areas, they don't provide the extra resources to make these stores more convenient for people. You know, you often see grocery stores when a neighborhood starts to gentrify or develop that you get this really fancy King Supers that you didn't have before. And so in some of these areas, these businesses aren't willing to put those expansions in or put those extra resources in to make it a more convenient or comfortable experience for all people.
Oh, you can see that in a King Supers that has not been updated versus a King Supers that's been updated. 100%.
I want to say a nice thing about this one Walmart that was number 3 worst grocery store in America. The one at 14,000 East Exposition Avenue in Aurora. I went there. I've only been there once. I went there to do a return of an online order. It was great. Great customer service. It was very easy, very fast. Great Walmart as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also just thinking back to like when I was a kid and Denver was just less populated, so grocery stores were less busy. And our grocery store, which was by your house, Paul, which is now a gym, was really nice. And the people were really, really nice. And I saw the same workers there for, you know, some folks work there for decades. So to me, this is just a symptom of this struggle with in-person retail that is not going the way of the worker.
I wonder. I like the consolidation point you made earlier too, Brie. Like, because there is, that's something that's specific about Denver, is the like longing for the past, that old Denver, new Denver contrast we always talk about.
Sure.
If these Walmarts are coming in and taking over the grocery market in a neighborhood, a lot of those folks who maybe are coming in and having their expectations not met, maybe they're lamenting the loss of their old neighborhood grocery store that they used to love. You know, I think
totally, that's
the old Denver, new Denver factor here.
Absolutely. I think, and just the lack of choice and, I don't know, the lack of competition. I'm thinking about that conversation we had with Attorney General Weiser recently, the way that these things impact our experience in everyday life. So, well, if you have a grocery store you love, actually, would you let us know that is? Please call the I Love My Grocery Store hotline at 720-500-5418. I want to know where the best customer service is. I want to know where the best produce is. I want to know why you love the grocery store that you go to, because I think we could really have a positive conversation about this too at some point. Okay, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, our Rocky Mountain highs and lows of the week. And we're back. We've got our Rocky Mountain highs and lows of the week, the things that ruled, the things that sucked in and around the metro area. Paul, do you want to start us with a fail?
Yeah, I got a fail. Well, so here's what happened. City Council approved a $50 million contract for this big construction project on Peña Boulevard on Monday.
Yes.
Which is, you know, that's well and fine. But then the fail happened in the interpretation of this news, because the issue of Peña Boulevard and what to do about it and the congestion has been a really controversial, really hot topic here in Denver, especially in the last year or so, ever since the airport folks started talking about widening it. We got into the whole widening highways debate. Transit people were like, how are we widening highways in 2024? So I saw this misunderstanding proliferate in the press, on the Denver subreddit, just in conversations with folks from some city council members who were talking about this, like, this contract, this $50 million contract, we should not pass this because it'll widen the highway and that's a terrible thing to do. And I was confused.
Well, I think you're making a great point. How would you think $50 million is going to widen a highway? That's like peanuts. You need so much more than $50 million. So the hysteria should have just like looked at the number for just one moment. But
yeah,
yes.
We'll put a link in our show notes to the interview we did with Denver Post reporter, former reporter, now editor, John Murray, back when this whole thing first flared up back in August. But he was talking about how it would cost like hundreds of millions of dollars. You know,
right.
And it's also a much longer term process. This is the more controversial, the bigger potential fix, which they're still in a public comment period for. So if you do have opinions about that, the airport, the city, they'd all love to hear that. But no decisions have been made about the widening Peña Boulevard issue. This $50 million, this is for safety improvements. This is for infrastructure improvements. That's what the comms chief at DIA told me. I called her to try to explain all this, and she totally cleared it up. And it's a completely separate thing.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting how a very small misunderstanding can proliferate in a part because this is such a sensitive topic for us in Denver, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The expansion of Peña Boulevard has been controversial since it's been pitched, and it's going to cost a lot of money. And I think there's a lot of reasons that folks don't want it to happen. So when this touches the news again, all of a sudden it explodes. And we're missing like the actual deeper details.
Yeah, that's really interesting because all I had heard was from our public transportation, less cars people who were just very adamant that this was a highway expansion. And I heard it from some very credible environmentalists who were pushing that narrative. And I hadn't dug deeper until recently to realize that that was not the case exactly.
This was a case of too long didn't read on the internet.
I think that's exactly what happened.
Justine, what's your fail for the week?
So my fail for the week is a fail that is currently happening, but there is a potential win at the end of this. So the fail is Colorado Funeral Homes. And they have been in the news a lot lately. Yes. In the last few years, some pretty horrible discoveries, absolutely disgusting situations. And, you know, that has been a big deal. So in 1983, Colorado Funeral Services Regulatory Board was disbanded. So basically, there are no regulations in Colorado. And this is like created the situation where some pretty disgusting things are happening at funeral homes. The fail is that we've let that go on for so long. But there might be something good in sight here. Lawmakers on Monday released a sweeping bill that's going to go ahead and finally create some regulations and licensing requirements for funeral homes here in Colorado. Well, the bill is pretty good. A lot of people agree with it. There are some kinks that they need to work out. But I think that this is great because hearing this news has been very disheartening to know that so many people have had to suffer through this situation because there has been no type of regulations here in Colorado since 1983.
Yeah, I have a friend whose family was potentially a victim of one of these funeral home situations, and it's been really startling for them to try to figure out if they were a victim of it. But yeah, if you want to know more about this situation, we had a great conversation with Faith Haug, who is the head of mortuary science at Arapahoe Community College. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. She kind of explains a little bit of how we got here, what these situations really mean per funeral home, and then sort of how the industry looks at it. Because like you said, Justine, there's some kinks to work out in this legislation, and it can be a little bit complex because, as Faith pointed out in our conversation, there are a lot of really good actors, not just these bad actors that are getting the press. So there's folks that have been in the industry for decades who are not actually, hadn't gone to school, but are still really good at what they do. So it's really a matter of finding some way to regulate it so it just, the bad actors don't have the capacity to do the things that we've unfortunately been reading about.
We'll put a link to that episode in the show notes, but I want to also just highly encourage anyone listening right now to go back and listen to that if you missed it. That interview Bree did was just fantastic. It totally changed my perspective on this issue. I was reassured about some things and then more scared about other things.
Same, Paul. I was like, oh, I left that feeling better and worse about everything.
Yeah, at the same time, somehow.
It was really fun and interesting to talk to Faith. Okay, my fail this week is this continuing saga of the forensic investigator, Yvonne Missy Woods, who in her almost 30 years with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation may have botched hundreds of cases involving DNA testing. Criminal cases. And there's a great piece by Carol McKinley in the Denver Gazette this week. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, explaining this, how it's sort of playing out now. We talked about it. We found out there's been this investigation into her work, but now families are having to like think about, is their loved one's murder case going to have to be re-litigated? There's a current murder trial for a gentleman who's on trial for the murder of three people, and they have to delay that because this was the person who was on the case dealing with the DNA.
Oh,
so
boy.
There's already so many issues that folks encounter in the justice system. And I can't imagine the nightmare that this is for families and for people on both sides of it, for people who have maybe been wrongly convicted, as well as folks whose family members were victims in crimes that they didn't get the correct answer to. So just epic bummer. okay, well, let's talk about fun stuff. Let's talk about good stuff. Justine, what was your Rocky Mountain High this week?
My Rocky Mountain High this week, I know everyone's very excited about St. Patrick's Day this weekend, but I'm very excited about Frozen Dead Guy Days being back.
Hey!
Yeah! So a lot of people may have heard of Frozen Dead Guy Days. The last few years, they've had some up and downs with organizers and the town, which Nederland is the town that they usually hold this in. But this year it will be in Estes Park, and it includes coffin races, frosty games, frozen t-shirt contests. It's really a lot of fun. And the frozen whole premise t-shirt behind this fun celebration, one of my favorite in Colorado, is around a guy named Grandpa Burrito, who was cryogenically frozen in, I believe, the 80s or 70s. But yeah, Grandpa Burrito now has a new location where he is resting, no longer in the Tough Shed. He is actually at the Stanley Hotel, where you can visit. He is now going to be an exhibit there, and you can visit Grandpa Burrito. But it's really a lot of fun, and I'm glad that I'm not, like, I have different feelings about the whole Estes Park location, but it's really exciting that it's back, and I've always enjoyed going. It's a very unique Colorado experience. So if you get a chance to go up to Estes Park this weekend, check out Frozen Dead Guy Days.
What are your mixed feelings about Estes Park?
Oh, about the location change. Because, like, the old Frozen Dead Guy Days, you know, they were, it was just
in,
like,
Netherlands.
Yeah, it was in Netherland. It was, like, all day, smaller town, bluegrass different and beer vibes. Tents, different vibes. So kind of bringing it to a more touristy city kind of takes away that those Colorado vibes, but it makes me excited because it does open it up to more people to experience the fun that is Frozen Dead Guy Days. It's not Estes Park. I love Estes. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not Estes Park. It's just, you know, OG Frozen
things.
Dead Guy Days stuff. Keep it in the Ned.
I think it was important for the thing to continue. Like, Estes Park just has better infrastructure for these kinds of things. And I think it was pretty cool that they took it on. I feel you. The vibe will be different, but it's cool that it gets to keep going. Paul, have you been to Frozen Dead Guy Days?
Not once.
Now's your chance.
I do want to.
Paul, what's your win this week?
All right. So my win is also in the realm of transportation. So for a long time, I have maintained that the only bad part of the Cherry Creek Trail is that strip where it goes along First Avenue, right by University and the Country Club, where it's like right by First Avenue, like only the curb separating you and these cars whizzing past, like going 50 miles per hour. And it's you're taking your life in your hands. And if there's snow, if there's rain, it's like
if there's people going two ways on the tiny path, both directions, it is precarious.
Or if there's a guy wearing Lycra zipping past you and maybe being a little rude, like there was last time I biked down that path. Yeah, it's just not fun. It's like, and the trail is so beautiful other than that, because it hugs the creek and it's like, it's my one of my favorite things about Denver, but that part is just awful.
Blame the country club, but go on, Paul.
I do. I mean, it's a whole thing. We should probably get into that a little bit deeper at some point. But the win aspect of this is that there is hope for change at some point soon. Because this week, the Denver Department of Transportation and Infrastructure published the final version of their plan for Cherry Creek. And Denver Moves Cherry Creek, as it is known, has got a lot of good recommendations and ideas. But one of their high priority recommendations is to widen the Cherry Creek Trail along First Avenue in that exact stretch, and to create a green strip between the trail and the road, and to put trees along that so there's an actual barrier. The downside is that they're taking space away from the median, not the country club, but the fact that there is some hope for this section of the trail to get better at some point, you know, maybe in 10-15 years, who knows whenever they're going to get the money to do this, is a real win for me.
They couldn't just take out a lane? Come on, you guys.
I know.
That is like, I mean, Spirit Boulevard is like a little highway, which is probably why people keep ending up in the Cherry Creek. But that's good news, because I think for a long time that stalwart has been the issue of the country club keeping us out of it. So this is the solution, at least temporarily or right now, is, well, right, well, we'll widen it the other way. So I love that. I do agree. I haven't rode that trail in a long time, but that is, it's such a gorgeous trail. And then you just get thrown into traffic and pray for your life. So, well, I'll close this up here. I want to celebrate Denver's second micro community for unhoused folks is ready to go in the Overland neighborhood. It looks beautiful. I drive by that section of the city fairly often. I think they did a wonderful job. I'm just happy to see this come to fruition. And I know that, the mayor's office has been working really hard on it, and it's cool to see it happen, right? We've been talking about these things for a long time. We're seeing them happen. I think they're accessible, they're clean, they're beautiful, and people get to be housed. So it's
what
win-win.
What does it look like? Does it look, how permanent does it look? Like, how established, you know?
Well, it's like the Tough Sheds, but they have windows and doors. And then there's like some sort of like a, not like a porch, but they have an area that connects them all. And there's ramps for people who use wheelchairs. And the permanency, that's a great question, Paul. I don't know. I don't know what the long-term plan is for them, but at the moment they look great to me. I mean, I wouldn't mind having one of these in my neighborhood at all. So we shall see. All right. Well,
that's serious progress for the mayor's effort to house another 1,000 people this year.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. There was a lot of controversy around that one as they were planning it, but I guess they got it done.
Yeah, it was interesting to me because there was already sort of an encampment happening there. And so this seems like a much better option. It was like a cleaner, safer space for the folks living there. But I mean, we're going to see this conversation continue to play out as these solutions are implemented. So I hope that it goes well. It looks great. Best of luck to the neighborhood for sure. Well, that's it. Thanks. Here we are, the end of the week. Paul, Justine, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
See you next time.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were Paul Caroli, Olivia Jewel Love, and Dylan Brogan. Peyton Garcia writes our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and I'm Bree Davies, your host. Our music is by Los Mogochetes with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at CityCast Denver and tell Ken Buck about us next time you see him. You can sign up for our daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week.